from Reclaim the Media in Seattle and the Northwest Community Radio Network. It's Listen Up Northwest. Each week, we bring you a roundup of stories from communities throughout our region. I'm your host, Yuko Kadama. Today, we look at arts and culture. The arts can make a statement, connect us to our history, and keep us going in the right direction. For some old enough to remember the roots of swing in the Harlem Renaissance, keeping that form of American dancing alive is about more than just cutting the rug. In Anchorage, a new public sculpture commemorates a piece of civil rights history. And theater arts offer people with disabilities new ways of communicating about accessibility issues. All this and more coming up next on this week's edition of Listen Up Northwest. Lindy Hop, swing, and tap set the dance world on fire as part of the African-American cultural renaissance that emerged from Harlem in the 1930s. Sally Bodie of KBCS Community Radio has this story about how a dance hall in Seattle is keeping alive the cultural values of that golden age.
America swings, baby.
In Harlem in 1925, swing was king. Count Basie, Duke Ellington, and Benny Goodman were giants of big band in that era. But few of us know the dancers of swing, Lindy Hop, and tap, who also revolutionized the world in many ways. Recently, the Century Ballroom in Seattle celebrated the masters of swing dance and music. Hallie Cooperman, owner of the Century, wants people to know the legends who created Lindy Hop and swing.
Part of the history is getting young people to hear the stories and know the people, so they want to bring that forth in later generations, or else this dance form has a good possibility of dying, like, you know, many things. And so it's also just such a treat for me. I grew up in New York City. It's such a treat to hear stories about what it was like in Harlem and in that time frame, what it was like to tour with all these great musicians.
One of those masters is Norma Miller, who at 86 is known as the Queen of Swing. Raised next to the famous Savoy Ballroom, she grew up dancing, becoming one of the best-known Lindy Hop and swing performers of the era. At the Savoy, Miller danced to the music of Chick Webb, Ella Fitzgerald, and Count Basie, music that made Harlem famous.
And Harlem at night was the jazz bed of the world. I mean, see, you can go anywhere. There was music coming out here, music coming out here. So it was something you lived with all your life, and that's what I did.
Miller remembers the time when black musicians could not play with white. The new American music that came out of Harlem changed all that. Miller continues to dance and travel, unwilling to retire just yet, so she can spread the gospel of swing that came out of the golden age of Harlem.
Swing is a freedom. When you begin to swing, and you begin to realize that people are of all peoples, because remember, we come up in a segregated country. I wasn't allowed to sit down here. I couldn't have a cup of coffee with you because you were white. That was the policy. We changed that. That's what we did, and swing did that.
Miller is writing books, making documentaries, performing and speaking, telling people the story of how swing changed the world.
I work at not letting it go away. It has to stay. It has to be kept alive because it's our Bach and our Mozart. That was our music. And our dance was the only original dance America ever created.
Swing and Lindy Hop dances are a hot ticket in Seattle. And according to Cooperman, it's often hard to get into the door at the Century Ballroom for a weekly dance. She wants more young people to see the masters of Lindy and swing and hear their stories. Because when you meet people like Norma Miller and Frankie Manning, Cooperman says it's easy to get excited, and the legends become more than a name in history or a character in a film.
Because that's what excites people, is like getting to know somebody. You know, if you say, I saw Frankie Manning in a movie, or you go to take class with somebody and you don't know anything, and your teacher says to you, I learned from a guy named Frankie Manning. Well, you don't know who Frankie Manning is, and you see him all of a sudden throwing people over his head and getting tossed around on film, and it means something. You go, I wish I could do that. But the day you get to say, I met him, they're so passionate about it.
The masters of swing can tell great stories and rarely get tired of sharing their enthusiasm for music and dance. Cooperman says you don't have to be a dancer or jazz enthusiast to enjoy listening to them.
But still, if I meet a big basketball player and he's famous and I watch him on the court and do his thing, even if I don't watch basketball, it's still amazing to me. And so you don't have to love or know anything about swing dancing to watch Frankie Manning and go, oh my God, or Sugar Sullivan or Dawn Hampton or, you know, any of Jenny Ligon, 90 years old. She turned 90 years old on Monday. And here she is. She's going to be out tap dancing and doing her thing and sharing her stuff.
At the last minute, Cooperman heard about a band that really swings and decided to add one more headline to the Century event. She flew in Chester Whitmore from Los Angeles along with his big band, Opus One. That Saturday night, the musicians performed for a sold-out crowd. Whitmore points out that most American music has roots in jazz. The music and dance kids enjoy today is nothing new. It's just been revised and the style has changed.
A lot of us Americans and a lot of people took it for granted because it's something that we do. It's, oh yeah, a lot of kids today. And I said, oh yeah, but you're forgetting. It, without jazz, it would not be no rap. It would not be no hip-hop. It would not be no rhythm and blues. It would not be no rebop or bebop.
Whitmore started out learning tap from the masters at the Apollo Theater and the Cotton Club, so he knows firsthand how electrifying it can be to watch great dancers.
You see a smile on your face of somebody in the audience say, wow, did you see that move? Or how did he do that? Or how did he slide across? Or how many spins did he do? Oh, and if you're tapping, wow, did you hear that cautious rhythm and stuff? You're making people happy.
Whitmore has been dancing for 34 years, but he never went to a dance academy. He learned from his family and on his feet. His advice for aspiring dancers.
Find out what they're like. There's so many forms of dance. Ballet, modern, jazz, tap, but find the one that you like.
And a lot of people are dancing to swingin' big band music at the Century and many other Seattle night spots. Miller says the music and dance that spilled out from Harlem has had a lasting impact on America and the world.
Ours was first. We were the pioneers of it. And I said, do you know what we did? We gave America an identification. And that was what the Lindy Hop is. And I was among those people who created that. And that's what I'm proud of.
I do my thing. Swing, baby, swing. Got to go.
That piece was engineered by Tamara Neely and contributed by Sally Bodie of KBCS in Seattle. We go from celebrating our elders in swing to honoring the elders of the civil rights movement in Alaska. In our next story, Anchorage unveils a new public sculpture commemorating the history of the Alaskan civil rights struggle. The sculpture titled Flight of the Raven honors a husband and wife whose names have come to symbolize that struggle. From Anchorage, Len Anderson has the story.
It's one of the most famous speeches in Alaska history. Elizabeth Paratovich's impassioned 1943 address to the territorial legislature advocating passage of an anti-discrimination law.
I would not have expected that I, who am barely out of savagery, would have to remind gentlemen with 5,000 years of recorded civilization behind them of our Bill of Rights.
Diane Benson portrayed the Tlingit civil rights leader in yesterday's ceremony at Paratovich Park. She plays Elizabeth in For the Rights of All, a public broadcasting system documentary currently under production. Roy and Elizabeth Paratovich's battle against discrimination began in 1941 when they moved from the village of Klawak to Juneau. A landlord refused them as tenants. It was a common practice against Alaska Natives. It was hardly the only discrimination the family encountered.
Even now, there are doors to schools closed to our children, and signs make it quite clear that I, as well as dogs, are not allowed. And still there are hotels and restaurants that turn us away.
Such situations existed across Alaska at the time. The territorial legislature balked at approval in 1943, but the efforts against legalized prejudice continued, and in 1945, the Alaska Anti-Discrimination Act passed and was signed by Governor Ernest Greening. It was the first such law in the nation. 4 years ago, Roy Paradovich Jr. told Anchorage Mayor Mark Begich he wanted to create a sculpture honoring his parents and the anti-discrimination movement. The best location was the downtown park named after his parents. Paradovich is a retired engineer who now has his own art studio in Washington State. With his Flight of the Raven, he wanted to symbolize, through Tlingit myth, his parents' successful struggle. The myth describes how Raven brought the sun to people, dispelling darkness.
The relationship there is to my parents, and they're both Tlingit Indians, and my father is of the Eagle clan, and mother was of the Raven clan. And with Raven's strength and courage and support, Raven again brought light to the world.
Roy Jr. seeks to render that story into a work so striking that it will lure passerbys to learn more about Raven's gift and his parents' story.
Raven flying at the top, and you'll see the sun in there, and the sun is made of a quartz, and when the sun hits it, it'll sparkle, so the rising sun will hit it, and the setting sun will hit it. And Raven then is supported by a stylized smoke trail that is made of a stainless steel. He's surrounded with a foundation that's been finished in polished black tile that is symbolic of the home.
The cost for Flight of the Raven was covered through a Rasmussen Foundation Challenge grant, matched by private funds raised by friends of Paradovich Park. No public funds were used.
That was Len Anderson from KSKA in Anchorage. Theater arts, especially comedy, can help make complex or difficult subjects more accessible. In Eugene, Oregon, a group of people with disabilities are using comedy to speak out more effectively on accessibility issues. Julie Sabatier brings us the story.
I traveled to Eugene, Oregon, to talk with people involved in the Lane Independent Living Alliance, also known as LILA. It's an organization run by people with disabilities for people with disabilities, working together for advocacy and empowerment. In addition to connecting people with services and doing voter outreach, the Lane Independent Living Alliance also offers acting classes. Longtime disability advocate Bijo Ashwell works as a counselor at LILA. She helps people build their self-esteem through sketch comedy and improv theater. Johann Mueller, another LILA employee, acted in one of Bijo's plays.
If I'm wheeling down the street, I see a lot of people look at me and then look away, and they see someone in a wheelchair. Whereas if I'm an actor on stage, I see people look at me as a person, and the wheelchair is just something I sit in.
Can you tell me a little bit more about what kinds of things you were doing in the comedy skits?
I was playing a person in a wheelchair who was kind of an outcast and was bucking the system. Part of my character was I robbed a liquor store.
I would have gotten clean if my tire hadn't gone flat.
And they couldn't hold me because their jail was not wheelchair accessible. And, I mean, it got a big laugh. That I can't be arrested because they can't put me in jail because they couldn't get me in the building. So accessibility was the joke, not wheelchair accessible.
Most of the time, accessibility issues are anything but a joke for Johann.
I have a genetic disability that's called familial spastic paraparesis, which essentially is the nerves in my legs don't function properly. They fire sporadically. So I have tremors and I can't walk more than a few steps because the nerves in my legs don't work very well. In all honesty, I find accessibility challenges extremely frustrating. When you cross the street, and there's a curb, to most people, it's a step. To me, it's a wall. Okay? If there are stairs to go into a building, even if there's one, it's a challenge to get in the building. And part of my job is to make sure that people who go to work have access to the building.
His title is Disability Navigator, and he helps other people with limited mobility access employment services in Eugene.
Being on stage and acting has helped me be a better public speaker. Just to stand up in front of somebody and say, here's what I do, and not be self-conscious and not be embarrassed about what I have to say.
Acting has also helped Johan to accept his disability.
I've been in the wheelchair for, say, 5 years, five and a half. I was fully mobile and able to walk and had a full-time job when I started to trip and fall down, and I didn't know why. For a long time, I was what Bijo likes to term militant independent. If someone would hold a door open for me, I would get mad. I mean, I can do it myself, so I don't need your help. And being in the wheelchair and the acting has all just helped me be who I want to be. Being with a bunch of people who share the commonality of having a disability, doing the same things that everyone else does, it's kind of a shared experience. So it's helped me realize that I'm not alone. I mean, everybody does this.
Linda Diaz, who also works for Lila, had a similar experience.
Hi, my name's Linda Diaz, and I'm the Hard of Hearing and Deaf Coordinator here for Hard of Hearing and Deaf Services at Lila. And I also run the vestibular support group, which is for people who have the disability of vertigo and dizziness and balance disorders. I am both hard of hearing, and I also have a balance disorder.
Can you explain a little bit about what a balance disorder is for people who might not know?
Yes. In our inner ear, we have a little place called the labyrinth of all names. It's very complicated in our inner ear. Your vestibular system or your labyrinth area is your navigator and the control of where you are up and down in space. Without that working, for all I know, I could be standing upside down right now. So I was very afraid to get up on that stage in that position of being in front of everybody, and just afraid that I'd have a vertigo attack in front of everyone. And once that happens, I'm sort of like a standing mushroom. I can't think or talk.
Well, and so how did you overcome that fear?
Well, humor was such a big part of it. I think we do a lot of laughing at ourselves in the plays and here at work. We have to laugh. If we're not laughing, we're crying. And crying, although needed, we need to do as we go through our depression, we do have recurring depression because, especially with hearing loss, you know, you get a little bit less, you get a little bit less, it's another loss. You do mourn those losses. And that's okay. But by using humor, it makes everything better. It's fun to laugh at ourselves. It's fun to show people that, hey, we're just people in funny bodies that just don't work the same as yours, but we still are the same as you.
That piece was produced by Julie Sabatier out of Portland, Oregon's Destination DIY. Art can help us relate to each other despite our physical differences. In the next section of the show, we'll look at how art brings us together despite how cultures and languages may make us feel worlds apart. We take a look at artwork by refugees who have made the Northwest their home. Each summer, the nonprofit refugee advocacy group, the International Rescue Committee, sponsors refugee artvocacy. Donald Giesen of KBCS Community Radio has the story.
The white dove sailed before she rests in the sand.
Philip Kraft enjoys days like today. A beautifully warm and sunny summer evening brings a lot of people out to the Seattle Center, and he provides some entertainment with his guitar and voice, singing songs of struggle and freedom.
Thank you.
Yet the themes of struggle and freedom were also at the heart of an event going on just a few feet from Philip at the Center House stage. Artwork and musical performances made up the annual Artficacy Show, which features visual and performance art by Seattle area refugees. Organized by the International Rescue Committee, Artficacy combines art and advocacy in celebration of World Refugee Day. Robert Johnson, regional director of the IRC, explains.
Artficacy is a celebration of refugee art, and not just visual art. We try to celebrate all forms of art, including performing art. So many of the groups here tonight are ethnic musicians or dance troupes. It actually started 3 years ago. It was our first event, and we do it every year around World Refugee Day, which this year happens to be today, and that is the day when the UNHCR, which is the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, has sort of designated a day to not only remember but think about refugees and their plight. And so we thought, rather than get too morbid about how bad it is, we thought we'd try to change that into more of a celebration of the art.
11 visual artists were featured, and the artwork ranged from intimate photographs of refugee life to oil paintings depicting the culture that they had left behind in their home countries. The artist that commanded the most attention with his life story as well as his charcoal paintings was Saw Kennedy. Saw came to the U.S. only 3 weeks ago, although he is not a newcomer to the Artficacy Show. His artwork was featured in last year's edition, while he was still in a refugee camp in Thailand. He fled his native home in Burma with his pregnant wife in 2000 and has since been placed on a watch list by the governing Burmese junta.
Before 2001, I live in Karen State in Burma. So, and then I moved to a refugee camp because Burmese military government, they destroyed our village and then they killed our people.
Whereas Saw Kennedy came to the U.S. just 3 short weeks ago, hip-hop artist J1 has lived here almost his entire life. Fleeing the war in Sudan more than a decade ago, J1, real name Jay Lett, arrived in the U.S. when he was only 4. After living in different cities all across the country, Jay's family finally settled in Seattle.
My family and I moved here from Sudan after a war that broke up. First, we moved here in 94. Right here, while we're in the U.S., you know, we have it more easier than our parents did back at home because they've been through the whole war. We were just born after the war. Now the whole South Sudan is damaged, it's torn down, but now we're working on the new South Sudan. Before they can
see the sky. Although every participant in this year's Artficacy event have their own unique story to tell, they all share a common desire to make a new life in this, their adopted country. But memories of their homeland, fresh for some like Saw Kennedy and almost forgotten by others like J1, still drive them as they learn to adapt to their new homes in the U.S. And perhaps their art will remind them and others of a life they once lived and perhaps will one day return to. This is Donald Giesen.
The answer is blowing in the wind.
For more information on the International Rescue Committee, you can go to the IRC.org. Seattle poet Myrna Ann Hecht worked with high school students in Washington who've experienced war. Together, they produced poems about war's repercussions. These pieces originally aired on KBCS Community Radio earlier this year.
My name is Kirby Flungin. I'm from Haiti, and the title of my poem is Pain.
Pain is the bloody red of a gun. It's the gun that destroys a country. It's the gun that leaves families homeless. It's the gun that brings pain to others. Pain is the black night that never ends. It's the night that we all fear. It's the night that we hide. It's the night that we cry out in anger. Haiti wants a place where children can laugh and play without fear, where they can smell the freshly washed clothes. The wind brings the smell of a mother's baking, the sweet smell of boiling sugar, and hear the chickens clucking, or the sign of rain falling on the roof. Will I ever see love bloom again? Will I ever see the sun shining instead of Haiti's dark night?
My name is Jonas Woldemichael, and I'm originally from Eritrea. I came to the United States 15 years ago. I am 18 years old. The name of my poem is Welcome to America. Welcome to America. Like you, I believe that I am different, only to realize that my story of escaping persecution, gunshots, and organized militia killings has been retold many times before. Bosnia, Somalia, Russia, and Sudan. The name of the country continues to change, but the story remains the same. Like you, I believed arriving in America was an end to my nightmare. The blood splatter would begin to dissipate. I would close my eyes and get some shut-eye for the night. Thinking that the American dream had finally been achieved, living the life of a rock star is all I've ever wanted. Yet America is nothing but a dream. All these opportunities to better yourself in agreement with the fine print. If I was a map maker, under the words North America, in tiny script, I would mention, side effects may include assimilation of American culture, loss of home culture, racism, consumerism, credit card debt, and a better lifestyle in jail. Like you, I am ignorant, but unlike you, I am caught in the never-ending cycles of examination and awareness, thinking thoughts of wisdom, truth, and knowledge, yet speaking as if I was a jaded cynic. Welcome to America.
My name is Hiba Khalif. I am from Somalia. The title of my poem is Death. I was born when my father was killed. I was born and he died. But to my mother's eyes, he can never be replaced. Many people say I resemble him, a father of mine whom I never knew. I heard he was competent and very strong. As a child, I questioned what he did wrong. My poor mother thought I was too young to understand. She said he was a soldier, but never caused any harm. She said people thought he was a threat to his own kind, which only makes me wonder why. Then I was sent to this crazy, consuming world on my own, full of sadness and joy, where I feel confused and often used. Birth was one thing, death was another.
My name is Huri Tesfai. I'm originally from Eritrea. I came to the United States 16 years ago. I'm 17 years old. As a senior, the name of my poem is Starting Over. Born in Sudan, but my blood is Eritrean. At the age of 3, I was wishing to be free. My country was in a war, my family getting ready to leave everything behind. Being aimed at as a target, not knowing where to go or where to hide. Holding on tight and not wanting to die. Innocent kids running. Their families either gone or dead. Shedding blood and tears. Yelling and screaming. Those were the sounds I heard. When people were dying and being harassed, coming to the land they're free. It was awkward, a weird feeling in my body. New people, new clothes, new language, a new area. Having to start all over from a different country. Having to go to school where I didn't understand the language. Having nobody to talk to, I felt like I wasn't welcome in America.
That was a selection from the War Poems Project in Seattle, Washington. It was produced by Myrna Hecht for KBCS with the help from the Seattle Arts and Lectures Writers in the Schools program and Jack Straw Productions. Listen Up Northwest is produced by Reclaim the Media at the studios of KBCS for the Northwest Community Radio Network. Find out more at nwcommunityradio.org. Thanks to contributors Len Anderson, Sally Bodie, Donald Giesen, and Julie Sabatier. Music by Northwest artists DJ B-Girl and Electron Love Theory. Special thanks to Deanne Hamilton, Norman Jayo, Sharon Maeda, and Joaquin Wee. And thank you for listening to and supporting your community radio station. For Listen Up Northwest, this is Yuko Kadama.